Recording 24B. You'll hear four different extracts. For questions 1 to 8, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Extract 1.
Now, Mark Harris, your new book includes some opinions on immunisation that are likely to arouse a strong reaction.
I hope they will. There's an overwhelming picture presented to the public, and that is that immunisation is a safe, scientific procedure which safeguards our health. But this message that is put out by governments, the medical establishment and the media is not supported by fact. Historically, supporters of immunisation have made grandiose claims about its effectiveness, while scientists have distorted the objective evidence to the contrary for fear of going against the mainstream. Very few are prepared to speak out and highlight the findings that much immunisation is not safe in the short term and that the long-term effects of certain forms of immunisation may constitute a major health hazard.
So, in your view, we should stop immunising all children against disease?
No, not at all. The need for immunisation is closely linked to a child's level of well-being. For a child living in hygienic conditions and receiving proper nutrition, immunisation has a minimal effect on the body's ability to fight off disease. But of course, this doesn't apply to a malnourished child living in insanitary conditions who will be less able to fight off disease. And also, there are all shades of variation between these two extremes in both rich and poor countries.
Extract 2.
I first got keen on snowboarding during a skiing holiday in Switzerland when I was about 15. The first couple of hours I spent most of my time on my back. My legs just kept buckling. But it didn't take me long to get fairly good at it, which is the experience most people have. It's no surprise that apparently around 80% of people going to ski slopes for the first time take up snowboarding now rather than skiing. I've got to admit, though, that snowboarding has an image problem among the general public. Snowboarders are very committed to their sport, but people have the impression that we spend most of our time sitting around chatting and having a laugh, rather than being on the slopes. There's a great deal of rivalry between skiers and snowboarders, and skiers are typically not very welcoming to snowboarders. I guess it's to do with who snowboards. It's still very much a young person's sport, whereas skiing is for all the family. So, snowboarders are viewed as pretty wild and crazy people who upset the rather sedate feel of the slopes that skiers have always been used to. But they're just going to have to accept it. Without the money that snowboarders bring in, a number of ski resorts will go out of business.
Extract 3.
It's always difficult when I tell people that no one's handed their property in. I think most of them are secretly convinced I'm hanging on to lost property for myself, or selling it off. I do nothing of the sort, of course. Usually, they'll ask me if I'm really sure, or say, "Can you have another look for me, please?" It doesn't seem to occur to them that anyone could run off with a coat or a laptop left unattended on a train. People leave some things behind on trains that you really would not believe. You get a load of clothes and umbrellas, of course, the kinds of things you'd expect, but also carpets, vases, lampshades, ironing boards. It's not even as if they're things that are cheap and easy to replace. We've even had animals as well. We had a huge spider once in a shoebox. I really think that people accidentally leave unusual things like this on the train because they don't know how else to get rid of them. You'd think people would be able to give them away or dispose of them in some other way rather than leaving them behind on trains, wouldn't you?
Extract 4.
More and more audio guides are becoming available, which you simply download onto your MP3 player and listen to as you walk around a city. I tested 4 of these out in my favourite city, Florence. The first was from City Sounds. I'm afraid I didn't like this. The delivery is terribly deliberate, and an occasional change of pace would have been welcome. The effect was closer to someone reading out a guidebook in a rather flat style, rather than a friend showing you around. Frustratingly, it frequently fails to guide you round the interiors of the buildings it takes you to, but wastes time talking about sites that aren't even on the walk. It's professionally produced, though, and considerably cheaper than the others. The second, Walk and Talk, was much better in my view. The polished speaker sounded like an enthusiastic old friend, and the information never felt like a lecture. There's just the right level of detail on the art and architecture you're looking at, and a clever use of a second voice to break in and recount tales about various artists. Very entertaining, although some of those stories sound rather far-fetched. The directions are clear, although the music used to accompany you as you walk wasn't to my taste. Perfect for anyone wanting to get to grips with the history and architecture of Florence. The third guide is one...